Yes, you are now listening to the sound of Sports Reports Disordered. And I got with me, of course, the one and only, the world famous, the world renowned. He was born in Texas, raised in Virginia, and he's representing everything New Jeruse. He wants you to know that nobody knows beauty the way that New Jersey does. Because, of course, Atlantic City held the first Miss America pageant.
Shout out to Vanessa Williams.
He is Mr. Logic. And I am your unorthodox statistician going left so much you thought I was southpaw. I do believe in Joe Henry. I do got your stats. I am 2-5. Tonight, LeBron versus Stephen A, part 87. We're going to go around the association and why the hell can't the Lakers beat the Bulls? You know, we're going to talk about the Sweet 16. So sad that my Wildcats are gone. You know what I'm saying? We got some WNBA talk. You know what I'm saying? Are the Fever on TV too much? And then finally, we're going to close it off. As you know, opening day was yesterday. So let's get right into it. Mr. Lodge.
I'm listening.
So as I was perusing today, just minding my business, you know, I was on the hot box. We were sitting up here trying to figure out. Now get ready for this. We were trying to figure out our number 11 through 20. Best quarterbacks of all time. You know what I'm saying? So as I was sitting up in here digging in some numbers, it goes, ding, breaking news. Taylor Jenkins fired as the Memphis Grizzlies head coach. And the first thing I thought was, he's a damn good coach. The second thing I thought was, the Memphis Grizzlies are synonymous with the Philadelphia Phillies and the Milwaukee Bucks. They try to put out the same team every single year and expect a different result. You know what I mean? Like outside of the Dylan Brooks trade, obviously. And I was trying to figure out what
they got Marcus Smart in return. So I just got a dark skinned.
Yeah, but Guess what? They traded Marcus Smart this year for Marvin Bagley.
Who got picked ahead of Luka?
You know, so Taylor Jenkins' record overall, 250-14. So, Mr. Logical, something happened last night that I think might have led to this a little bit. So, there's probably a scandal attached to this, I'm imagining.
Yes.
You know what I'm saying? Like, maybe he pulled an E-May. But this is how I'm going to go about this. Last night, they were playing Oklahoma City. Ja Morant was out yet again because he's only played 43 games this year. They were tied at 99 in the fourth quarter. Final score, Oklahoma City 125, Memphis 104.
Well, I mean, you got to get points from somewhere. That's what superstars are there for. If you don't have your superstar there, it's going to be hard to manufacture points in crunch time.
So they got their version of David Blatt, I guess, taking over as the interim coach. I hope I'm saying his name right. Tomas Isalo. You know, he was over in the Germany Bundesliga league, and then he coached some Paris basketball. Apparently, he's an innovative offensive guy. He's only 42 or 43 years old. So I wonder if they're going to go with him for the future, provided things go well. But this is my biggest problem with Memphis firing Taylor Jenkins right now. You know how your team is not good enough when you just tried to trade for Kevin Durant about 4 weeks ago. So, obviously, you didn't think you could win.
We talk about this a lot on the show. And I'm not sure if there's an understanding of checks and balances. Our current government, shout out to Liquid Death, our current government and a lot of entities are just kind of operating as if a monopoly is the standard. Or being surrounded by yes men is the standard. That's never been the standard. Everything requires balance. You can't just work out all the time and not sleep. Like, you need to get some good sleep. You need to eat good food. It needs to be balanced. You can't spend your whole life at work to make money to spend on your family, but never spend any time with your family. It requires balance. Everything requires balance. I feel like a lot of these offices and people in these positions are hired on by buddies and friends and golf buddies. So it is just too many yes men. I think it's too many yes men around the players. I think it's too many yes men around the building. Someone needs to come in and say, hey, it is not his fault that Ja Morant's only played 52 games out of the last 150 or so available opportunities to exclude the playoffs. I don't think they made the playoffs, but it's like, it is not the head coach's fault that your star isn't available.
And or that your star likes guns.
And when, and like, I think his behavior like has been better. I don't remember seeing any off the court stuff, but it's like the coach, unless he make these GM moves, then it's not on him. But when you fire a coach that people around the league respect, it's going to be hard for you to be able to reach out and hire another coach. It's happened to a lot of teams. You saw what happened. It happened with the Lakers a little bit, to the point where like people heard about the deal that they tried to give Ty Lue 3 years, $18 million. It was like, why would you do that?
I mean, now, you Dan trying Hurley to get a turned down coach. 70.
Turned down 70 because it's like, you guys aren't a serious organization. And it's going to become Memphis's thing. Because we always talk about the small market versus large market. If people really factor in that small market and like, and you're dysfunctional, it's like, why would I go there? Why would I want to be a head coach there where the inability of a player to stay healthy somehow becomes my fault because I can't get these other, you know, average NBA players to play exceptional? Like, that's not how it works. Right. We talked about it before we came on. About 26 teams can really say they have a superstar. We figured Portland doesn't have one.
Brooklyn. Well, I said Washington, but you know, well,
I think Jordan, Utah, like a lot of these teams don't have like this superstar that can be in the mix for top 25 player in the league. So when you have a guy like Ja, like, yo, you are in this 10 to like 25 any given, you know, stretch of time. You might be one of these top guys, but you got to be available this whole time. So you not being there, now Devin Booker is the 17th best guy in the league, and you're not available. So it's like, if you don't have that guy available, the coach can't be held accountable for the lack of availability of a player unless he's getting the player hurt like the way we feel about Tibbs.
Well, you know what, Mr. Logical, and all y'all out there, we appreciate y'all. You know what I'm saying? Do us a favor and like, review, subscribe, share, rate, do all the free things, do all those good things. You know, back in 2013, and I bring up 2013 because this is nothing new, the Memphis Grizzlies made the Western Conference Finals for the only time in franchise history. And you know what they did? They didn't renew Lionel Hollins' contract. You know, so this ain't a Taylor Jenkins thing. This is a Memphis Grizzly thing. They don't know how to handle success. They don't know what success is, and they don't know how to get there because we go back and look at it. And I know I make jokes, right? I talk about how Dylan Brooks ain't shit. And believe me, he ain't. But at the same time, he was the leader of that team from the emotional standpoint.
He was light-skinned Draymond.
Yeah, he had that Draymond effect. Now, he didn't do the things that Draymond did on the court, but the way, you know, he was, I poke bears.
Yeah.
And of course, they got their ass whooped, but that's what he was for them. They traded him for Marcus Smart, brought him in last year. Ja was suspended for 25 games. He played 9, got hurt for the rest of the season. They won 3 out of the first 4 games that Ja played. So now they trade Marcus Smart. You know, so what I wanted to do real quick, Mr. Logical, you know, because I know fans, you know, none of the fans like their head coach unless you're winning championships, right? So I've been reading Memphis Grizzly message boards. I've been reading on Reddit, the Grizzly fans, and all they keep saying is the rotations and the lineups. Every single fan base in the NBA says that about their
rotation
coach.
And lineup. Yeah,
you know what I mean? But what I want to do for you right now, because the Grizzlies were in the 2 seed for a good significant portion of this season. Right now, coming into tonight, they're the 5th seed, a game and a half out of 3rd, and they play the Lakers tomorrow. So they have an opportunity, you know, to make up some ground here. But this is what I want to do. Let's go down this roster real quick, Mr. Logical, and you let me know what Memphis is supposed to be. So obviously, you know, they got Ja Morant.
Okay.
You know, they got Zion Pullen. They got a rookie.
6'9" that can defend? Is he like?
No, he's a guard. They got Jalen Wells, the rookie, who's probably going to finish 3rd or 4th in the Rookie of the Year contest. They got Scottie Pippen.
Current Jr. NBA rookies haven't had the same kind of impact for whatever reason. Last few years, rookies have pretty much.
They got Scottie Pippen Jr. I did not say Scottie Pippen Sr. You know what I mean? They got Vince Williams Jr. They got Santi Aldama, Lamar Stevens, Luke Kennard. They have Defensive Player of the Year candidate Jaren Jackson. They got Zach Edey, Brandon Clark, who's out for the season yet again. Yuki Kawamura, Desmond Bane, who's has no arms. You know, they got a rookie, Cam Spencer, Gator, out of UConn, national champion. They got Jay Huff, Marvin Bagley, G.G. Jackson, and John Conchar. What is that team supposed to do?
That's the thing. We talked about this in a pre-meeting. I don't know who these teams are measuring themselves up against, but they need to bring their standards down a bit and realize, hey, we are 4-7 in the West. That's what our roster is as presently constructed. If and we it's can probably get
not
if,
though,
but if we can get some real cohesion, we are 3-5. But when you go into the season, I think some of these teams, and we see it in the NFL, we see it with these free agent moves, and we see with the contracts. As a fan, we're looking like, how does Stephon Diggs get $23 million a year? Why did they trade Dylan Brooks? Why did they fire this coach? Like, we're, as a fan, we're just kind of looking like, this doesn't make any sense. Like, who do you think you are as an organization? When Phoenix gave up all those picks to get Kevin Durant and Bradley Beal, and it was like, who are you guys think you're going to be when you get rid of the debt? Like, these guys need breaks. This isn't a video game. This isn't 2K where you can turn off the energy and they can just keep going and going and going. It's like, they need breaks. So, like, when we're sitting on the outside looking in, it's like, who's telling you what your high-end expectations are? Like, the Venn diagram, what's the most likely scenario, or worst-case scenario, best-case scenario, most likely scenario? Your most likely scenario is 4-7 in the West. That's where you should be thinking you are with a superstar that has availability problems and a very basic surrounding cast. Desmond Bane's a good player, but he doesn't do anything exceptional to the point where the opposing coach is going to have to game plan for Desmond Bane. He's a good player, but it's not like, oh, he's gonna drop 30, but also defend and get 7 rebounds and 7 assists on a regular basis. You know what I mean? So it's like, okay, we play Desmond Bane straight up with our best wing defender, and we just let it ride.
Right.
So I think teams don't understand is like you're measuring yourselves against this expectation that you don't have the pieces to achieve, and then when you're not close, like you said, you're a game and a half out of third. To me, that's overachieving what you currently have as a team. Mm-hmm. But to them, they're like, oh, we should be second or first. Like, against who? You can be better than the Lakers with Luka, or even with AD and LeBron. You thought you was going to be better than the Lakers, or you can be better than OKC, or you can be better than Denver. Like it's not realistic.
Well, you know who I cannot figure out? Like, I cannot figure out this Jimmy Butler cat. You know, like, I feel like he has to be running from an avalanche to do his best. Because you know me, I love rivalry. You know, I love the story within the game. So I was excited when Jimmy Butler went to Miami the other night, only for the Warriors to lose by 26. You know, now granted, Steph didn't play, you know, but still, 26
points. He should have went for 50.
He should have went for 50. He went 5-12 from the field. And this is one of those things about Jimmy Butler, like, that I always talk about. He does not care about the regular season one way or the other. But I tell you what, in a couple of weeks, because the playoffs start in about 2.5 weeks, Jimmy Butler and the Warriors are going to be one of those teams that you don't want to see. And I'm going to tell you who the Lakers don't want to see, and they're lucky because the Bulls aren't in the West. Like, how do the Bulls keep beating the Lakers? I mean, they beat them by 31 last week. Like, just... Yeah. They lost to the Bulls twice in a week.
Yeah, the end of the game was crazy.
Yes.
Like, if you started off your show talking about the Lakers and that was the game you used, I'm with it. But they're going to talk about the Lakers when they beat Memphis and LeBron goes for 21-6-6 because they're going to beat Memphis by 25 points.
And Gilbert Arenas ought to be a damn shame to himself. He might as well break out some damn pom-poms.
Listen, everybody's doing something different. Everybody doing something goofy surrounding.
No, these dudes trying to get on the clutch good side. That's what they're trying to do.
Listen.
We'll get into that later.
Yeah, we'll get into that. You know, I have an analogy for that.
And real quick, we got Michigan 29, Auburn 28 with 2:26 left in the first half. We got Houston 12-10 early against Purdue.
All right, so go back to your Jimmy Butler point. These guys are old. This is like, no matter how people want to slice this up, certain things in our natural lives are for different aged groups. Learning how to skateboard is not something you do at 32. You have all the physical tools as the 7, 8, 9, or 12-year-old. True. But you don't start learning how to skateboard in your 30s. You just, that's not the thing you put on your list, because you fall, you hurt your shoulder, now you can't go to work, you can't pay for your kids, whatever. It's just not a thing you do. These guys who play 8, 9 years of college, professional baseball and go back to college and try to play wide receiver in college, like, that time is gone.
Right.
So when you have guys that are 34, 35, 36, and you have coaches, organization, and fan bases thinking like they're going to rely on these guys to make a deep playoff run, I'm like, you're tripping. You're not beating Boston with 34-year-old guys in your starting lineup. You're not beating Denver with 35-year-old guys in your starting lineup, relying on these guys. You're not beating OKC when your average starting lineup starts with the age is like 28. It's just not going to happen. And people say, oh, like the youth, they don't understand. Listen, the game is simply run the lanes, pick and roll, shoot the three. You don't need to know anything else about defense. If you can go 3 for 2 because you're running, sprinting to the corner, and you're getting open looks because you have 35-year-old Jimmy Butler defending you, and you are 22-year-old Oklahoma City guard, and you're just sprinting to the corner, you're going to get a good second and some change to look at the rim after you catch this ball and get a good shot off. Any NBA player can hit that 4 out of 10 times, and that's what's going to happen.
Not so Harrison anybody, Barnes in a game 7.
Well, he was nervous. He had a guy, he was looking across at another couple of killers, and he was like, I'm not matching them, and I'm the one that's falling apart. Yeah. But these other guys don't know that. They don't feel that. They know they can get around Jimmy Butler. They know they can beat these guys with the dribble. They know what speed and athleticism looks like. If I challenge my sons right now to a foot race around a block, they don't have to put much thought into it. They're going to beat me around the block. Now, can they beat me in a fist fight? Probably not. But that's not the challenge we got. You got to chase these guys down. You can't just outstrength them. And even LeBron and Luka, like, they have a lot of young guns with them, but it's like eventually the game is going to go through those two guys. And if they're not on, the other guys won't try to get themselves on. I talked about last night, you know, we're going to dive into the tournament. I sent the text message in the group saying Duke is playing so confident. It was guys taking pull-up threes, corner threes with Cooper Flagg on the floor when Arizona's charging back. It's like, they were like, listen, I'm out here too. I think a lot of NBA teams that are young play like that. These guys that have these old heads. Jonathan Kuminga doesn't come down 3 or 4 possessions and make things happen. I'm not saying taking shots, but like the ball gets to him and he's calling plays and clearing people out and then calling Draymond for the screen. It just doesn't happen. You know, so when you have these older players like that, they expect that kind of dominance. So it's easy to defend. If I'm playing against the Lakers or LeBron, LeBron's great, Luka's great, but I know what's coming. I know Rui's not going to do anything special. Austin Reeves might do his thing. He might get the shake and wiggle. But 4 or 5 guys that come on the floor are simply going to wait for their opportunity to be told, yeah, you're good for the next 4 minutes. And so I'm going to tell when that happens.
So you remember the other night I was talking about how Kevin Durant had scored 42 points, and then he scored 38 points. Riddle me this, Mr. Logical.
Yeah.
So Kevin Durant scored 34. Devin Booker scored 38. But the Celtics put belt to sun and won that game by 30 points without Jason Tatum. What are we doing?
Because Boston has players who know their role and they play confidently. And they know when the ball swings to them, it's my shot. If I got to do the extra swing pass, it's my shot.
My bad. That was the fantasy points. Durant scored 30. Booker scored 14. That answers the question.
Okay.
I was looking at the wrong column.
But that's the difference. And I think, and all these conversations, like I said, we're going to get into LeBron and the Lakers, but it's like all these sports shows that are using the Lakers as their opening topic. It's like the Lakers are fourth in the West. They have a clear disadvantage with depth against the other teams that are ahead of them and even continuity with the other teams that are ahead of them. I'm not doubting Luka LeBron's talent, but at a certain point, it has to be understood that they're like 14 games behind Oklahoma City, who's still intact. Like, they have all their guys. Guys miss time early in the year, but Shea's playing like an MVP. Chet's playing like a great Robin the Batman. And everybody else is playing their role masterfully, to include the coaching staff. Everyone understands the main thing is the main thing. And there's nothing to say that they shouldn't be the outright favorites. And by proxy, should be the people we talk about. But we don't. And it doesn't make any sense. It's like you want the Warriors to be good. The Warriors are not. It's over. It's cool. But it's a wrap. Has
fallen.
Like, just yo, like I can't.
2 years ago.
I got these degrees now. I'm not going to be able to rejoin the Air Force and be an officer. That time has come. Yeah, mentally, I think I could do it. Leadership skills, I think I have to understand the mission, everything else. But, dog, physically, it's a wrap.
Mentally, I'm about this close to picking the Pacers to beat the Cavs in the second round. But we'll talk about that once the playoffs get a little closer. What we will talk about right now is part 87 of the war between Stephen A. Smith and LeBron Raymond James. You know, LeBron Raymond James decided to go ante up. I'm going to come to your channel. I'm going to come to the dude that's trying to challenge you for your spot at the station. I'm going to go to the dude that's trying to get paid as healthy as you got paid. And I'm just going to do a tell-all. And what else am I going to do? I'm going to let him ask me one question about you. I'm going to answer it in one sentence, and I'm not going to talk about you the rest of the interview. You know Stephen A. had to be salty. He wanted some more attention. He wanted some more LeBron shitting on him so he could – I mean, he was going to jump on TV and talk trash anyway. But you know he really wanted LeBron to let loose so that he could come and have a whole show centered on LeBron.
Absolutely. Shout out to Chris. I'm going to give him credit for this. He sent the voice, though, in our group chat saying, like, sports talk is starting to feel more like The View. And remember, I said that same thing when we were talking about something else in the Hot Box podcast. It's like, yo, what are we talking about here? Mm-hmm. My father sent me this text message this morning. And, like, this is where I want to, like, base kind of the conversation around. He was like, so my son, apparently LBJ doesn't like or care for Stephen A. Smith. It's sad that we as indigenous people can't work through problems and let the social media thing destroy the hard work that we put in. It's amazing that a billionaire and a millionaire can't carry on a simple conversation without trashing each other. I don't understand why we do stupid and say stupid shit and are about each other. Fuck ratings. Real men do real shit, not this clown show. So,
shout out to Bulls. What up, Mike?
And when he said that, it was like, and like me reading it out loud, like I can really feel what he means is that Stephen A. Smith has the international, but at least as far as sports, the American Sports Network. He is one of the top shot callers that we see. Minus the executives and stuff like that, the people who sign checks. But as far as like the talking heads, he is the top of the mountain. So he can dictate the conversation. And he always seems to mention something along the lines like, hey, this is what the fans want to talk about. My father's a fan of sport. He doesn't want to hear this clown nonsense. Everybody in our sports group, we don't want to see you on TV talking about every little thing LeBron said. They literally had a segment on First Take where, what's the dude named? Mad Mike, Mad Chris.
Oh, Mad Dog.
Mad Dog, whatever it is. He took a statement where LeBron said Giannis will average 250 points. Obviously, he's being facetious. No one's going to average 250 points in a real game. They made that a real segment the week of the MLB coming back, the NCAA tournament's on, the NBA playoffs are coming up, college draft, like,
Ovechkin about to break Wayne Gretzky's record.
Ovechkin's about to break a record. It's like all these other things are going on in sport, and you are having a serious segment about a facetious statement that a guy made just because it's LeBron. And that's the problem. It's like you sat up there and allowed them to make these, to like, yo, because me and you, we talk. We send text, like, what do you want to talk about? Want to talk about this? Want to talk about that? We're on probably like show. At this point, we've been doing it for 2 years, about 104 weeks, a couple of shows. So we're well over probably 200 of these types of shows, right?
Yeah, this just is episode 218, actually.
218. We've probably had 7 LeBron-centric topics, if that. And we've talked about everything. We've talked about women's rugby.
Yo, people have hit me up and was like, yo, y'all actually had a 20-minute argument about the Carolina Panthers.
And then we had another one about the Tennessee Titans. Yeah. And me and you had a conversation before all of that, before we went on the show, about something completely different. It's like, you guys have all this access, but you lean on these statements. And like Stephen A. Smith, for him to go, and I think, like I said, Kevin Love addressed probably like, oh, I didn't want to have to address it. It's like, dog, you're at a Lakers game. People sit courtside of the Lakers game like it's a fashion show, because everything that happens courtside of the Lakers game is literally a TV show. Fuck, Entourage probably had 10 different episodes where they were just sitting courtside for a real game. The Kardashians, when she was married to Lamar Odom and they were dating the players, they were like, the Lakers are big time show no matter what.
Hey, shout out to Paula Abdul.
You know what I'm saying? So it's like for him to act like, oh, I didn't think people were going to really record. Like, it's just, it's deliberate that you're going on this trial. And then when he went on Gilbert, he's talking about, if he would have done something, I would have swung on him. Come on. Like, you're just perpetuating it because you wanted to go through April. You want your saga to be bigger than sports. You want to be bigger than sports. You work with a guy, Skip Bayless. He wanted his voice to be bigger than the subject matter, to the point where he wouldn't even honestly assess a sporting event. Like I said, LeBron could go 20 for 30 and score 58 points. And he'd be like, those 10 shots were so bad. Any high school student could have made those shots. It's like, yo, dog, he went 20 for 30. And he would talk about, did he not miss the 10 shots? Am I not lying? And it's like, he was annoyed with that. Yet now he's doing the exact same thing Skip Bayless is doing.
Yo, first of all, I'm giving Skip Bayless credit because he actually called Chris Bosh Bosh Spice to his face.
He knew he wasn't gonna get touched for it. Listen, it don't make you tough if you say it on camera.
Well, look, this is how I look at this. Like, you know, I am not anywhere near the LeBron James fan camp. I did enjoy every single minute of the hour and 11 video that I watched. You know,
you're not close to the fandom of the fan camp, but you understand the player.
Well, what I got basketball out of it, player.
I think the fandom is excessive. Like, I agree that the fandom and the, you know, like Bronny scored like some points in the, like 17 points in that game and people went crazy. I understand, like, if you're like, why are you guys going over the top? But as far as like the basketball player is like, you're not gonna be like, he's all right.
What I got out of it is, you know, we live in this new age, social media, you know, you have access to everybody. He is a fan. You know, you have access to everybody, you know, through Twitter, through Blue Sky, through all these different apps. But this was the face of the league for the last, I don't know, 20 years at least, You know, going on to national TV and just having a free flowing, open, honest conversation. You know, that answering questions that people might have wanted to hear him answer that had nothing to do with Stephen A., you know, talking about why he went to Miami, talking about the decision, talking about how Rondo made Boston the big four and it wasn't a big three. Like, just saying all these things that, you know, people have been wanting to hear from the horse's mouth. You know what I'm saying? Now, the one thing that I did take exception for with LeBron was that he ain't have to do Wendy like that. You know what I'm saying? Wendy, you know, from what I can tell, because, you know, I gave up First Take years ago. But Wendy, from what I can tell, is a pretty stand-up dude that tells it like it is. I've never really heard him talk about LeBron the way that, say, Kendrick Perkins does or anything like that. So LeBron, the shit on him the way that he did, while it was kind of funny, it was kind of like, come on, dude. But even in Brian Windhorst's response, he just pretty much said, look, LeBron doesn't owe me anything. He's been a great friend of my hometown and alma mater. That I'm a stand on. You know what I'm saying? He could have said much worse. He could have said something that would have kept the drama going. You know what I mean? So then but you got Kendrick Perkins.
For some reason, black pundits like the drama, and we like the drama with other black people in because public.
We know that the people like the drama.
It's like the Mandingo fighting. It's like, I don't understand why people aren't understanding how deliberate and how ridiculous it looks. Main thing with the Stephen A. Smith conversation is like, dog, you're literally going on a tour talking about a guy,
a Taylor Swift
came
tour.
Up to you, Taylor Swift tour, who came up to you like, yo, dog, don't talk about me as a father. Like, do we talk about Bill Walton when Luke Walton's out here struggling to coach? We don't talk about, like, but like I said, it's the conversation, like I said, I'm going to quote Dan Patrick. He's like, Dan Patrick said, yo, Stephen A. Smith felt like, you know, LeBron didn't come to him like a man or handle like a man. He was like, that's exactly what he did. He came to you face to face. He said his piece. And then he said, not handle like a man would have been him putting out a tweet. Him, you know, talking about something on some other social media platform, or having his team reach out to Stephen A. Smith, or having his team put out something. But he's like, he approached you like a man, and then you went on a tour basically talking about how he didn't do that. And we talked about this before. His camp reached out to Stephen A. Smith before about a topic, and then he went on TV and talked about how the camp reached out to him.
And
called him soft for it. So it was like, you have $100 million contract. That is generational changing money. You are going to be able to leverage networks and everything else. You don't need to keep using LeBron because Skip Bayless literally is not involved. He's even tweeting into it. It's like, oh, you're not even involved, but you guys are so desperate to suck at the LeBron teat that he chimed in. It's like, dog, you had nothing to do with this. Like, nothing to do with this. It's like, remember that J. Mills Murder Mook freestyle when they was in Harlem? And then, like, J. Mills is doing his thing, and some dude behind him was, like, chiming in. And Mook was like, yeah, who's that? But it was like, I think it was Uncasa. I think it was Uncasa, but he was like, J. Mills is doing his thing, and Uncasa.
Hey,
like,
leave Uncasa alone. It was so really like, good, Flea.
Yeah, but he was like, yo, who is this? Like, why are you doing this? And that's what you know, Skip Bayless is doing. Because no one's rocking with his show. I don't know where his show is. I don't know what it's called.
I think he just has a podcast now. I don't think he's on TV anymore.
He was like, he tried to get Gilbert Arenas to come on. And it's like, yo, stop trying to.
Yeah, Gilbert like Arenas, Jesse Williams. New, yeah.
Yeah, Jesse Williams.
You know what Gilbert Arenas is? He's the new Kendrick Perkins. Because Kendrick Perkins at one point in time, Waffle House pod, what up, Residente? You know, Kendrick Perkins at one time was trying to get that clutch stimulus. So he was on TV kissing LeBron's ass every chance that he got until he said the one thing that LeBron didn't want him to say or, you know, took exception to. And now it's, no, Stephen A. Smith, I blocked him. You know, and all this kind of stuff. Like, he unfollowed like, first, whatever. And then, but then now you got Gilbert Arenas over here, you know, as you said, sucking the LeBron teat. And now he's all of a sudden Team LeBron. You know, like, get out of here, man.
Just it, like I said, sports. We talked about it before. Yeah, we talked about this in our pre-meetings. Like, I think some of the people who really admire LeBron as a basketball player, and either they know him personally or they just understand, like, hey, what this guy's doing is this level, like, you don't want people to just shit on it, because we've talked about Shaq and Chuck kind of shitting on the game. It's like, yeah, we can't keep shitting on everybody. But the problem is, in order to like combat the crazy parade of shit that people kind of throw out there, you got to swing your pendulum the complete opposite way. Now it looks like you're quote unquote meat riding. But it's like, someone has to get good truthful information out there. Skip Bayless can have a real argument. Like, yo, I think LeBron, I know he got to that finals in 07 and got swept. I think he could have done better. Cool. How do you think he could have done better? Like, hey, I think he could have worked on his jump shot more that year. Maybe the San Antonio defense wouldn't have been so effective. Okay, that's real analysis. But it'd be like, oh, he choked. And when the lights are the biggest, it's like, yo, he was in the NBA finals.
What is it? The chosen one became the frozen one.
The Dallas series, you can say, yo, that flamed out. It's cool. It's cool to really use analysis and fact. That way, when you have an opinion about something else, people don't kill you for it. Because like the way he was glazing Tim Tebow was like just crazy. But the way these I was about to say that. Like I said, this is probably one of these Jesse Williams actors on Grey's Anatomy in his philanthropist in public.
Bootleg Tony Parker.
No. I know who he is.
Looks like Tony Parker. Yeah.
Yeah. So he said something in a speech like 8-9 years back, and he was talking about, being black.
It was
at the BET Awards.
Okay.
And he was like, just because we're magic doesn't mean we're not real. And I think a lot of these shows are building the framework of their show around the black athlete, but then they want to tear him down. It's like, yo, you haven't led a show with Jackson Dart ever. You've never led a show with Lane Kiffin ever. You've never led a show with Luke Kennard playoff success ever. You lean on these black athletes, and Stephen A. Smith sitting there, you're seeing this. You're seeing how the public media is using black athletes to push their show, good, bad, or different conversation, but yet you get an opportunity to speak about anything because you already have a daytime show. You're on everybody else's show, and then you go and get podcasts to continue to talk about.
You know what I'm going to say, right?
Getting more negative attention from LeBron and getting negative attention from the fans. It's
you
like,
know what I'm going
to
say, right?
No one's chiming into your podcast to hear you talk about Bronny.
You know what I'm going to say, right?
Set.
Ain't nobody telling these people to click on it. Ain't nobody telling these people to watch. Ain't nobody telling these people to turn to that channel.
I don't know who's chiming into this to the point where it's like, why are you still talking about this? It cannot be driving the ratings that much. It can't be unless they're only counting the click, unless they're simply counting the
click. Oh, yeah, there's definitely click per minute.
And that has to be it. That's the only thing, because it's like, it has to be.
Well, you remember Jay-Z. You brought up rap earlier. Let me bring up some rap. You remember Jay-Z? They did the I Get High freestyle, and he was like, yo, Jazzo album in stores. Jazzo. Go get Jazzo album. Like, like you say the name LeBron, and poof, you know what I'm saying? People will appear.
Yeah, it's – to me, I understand it from the Facebook fan and the bots that are arguing in Facebook groups. But for someone who literally, he has legitimate access to probably any athlete he wants through ESPN.
Bro, bring Shea on First Take.
Bring Shea on. Hell,
Jason Tatum come to your show and talk about how he should be the face of the league.
He could bring Obama to the show if he wanted to. He could bring Obama to the show. He could call someone at ABC and be like, hey, Obama's a big basketball fan. We got the NCAA tournament. We got political unrest in the country. We got the NBA finals, like the NBA playoffs coming up. He's a Chicago guy. You know, we could talk baseball. We could talk basketball. Get Obama on the show.
Speaking of which.
And he could do that. But instead, he'd rather sit there with Mad Dog talking about some hypothetical Giannis could score 250 in the game.
I gotta admit. Hold up, real quick. Auburn 30, Michigan 29 at halftime. There's 3:22 left in the first half. Purdue's up 22-21 on Houston. And yes, I said with 3 minutes left in the first half. So look, as like Mad Dog, I did think it was funny. I can't lie. When he went on his tirade about how Dr. J is better than Giannis, like, you know, I did think that was pretty funny. I can't lie. I wouldn't turn it to ESPN to watch that.
I watched every game. You did not watch every game because it didn't come on every channel. It was eight channels in 1978. You didn't watch every damn game. Cut the cap. Like, what are you talking about?
That dog was at the Garden, bro.
I was up till 3 o'clock in the morning watching every game. I grew up in the 70s. You don't know nothing about it. God damn it, stop lying.
You don't think Mad Dog? You don't think Mad Dog went across the Verrazano?
He went to his bodega and he ate fucking chopped cheese sandwiches, and then he put on this phony accent and he watched the Yankees. That's it. His dad snuck him in the games or whatever, some bullshit he's talking about. You did not watch every hell. That they didn't even put every game on TV.
Stadium legend.
They didn't even put the NBA Finals live on TV. Why are you getting on TV line? On top of that, Giannis is 6'10" and can fucking run the court in six steps. Ain't a dude alive that could do that. Yeah, Walt was like that. Walt didn't even win that many MVPs.
Yo, look, time out.
Or Wilt, my bad.
I'm not going to get into this argument right now, but look.
I just think that people use the LeBron name, the other black athlete to get up there, and they pump this obnoxious propaganda. It was like, listen, I'm a logical person.
That's fact.
And I don't like people just sitting up there just like, yo,
hey, look,
leave your feelings out of the way, B.
I don't want to talk about Jordan and LeBron ever again. I don't want to do the whole.
We've had that conversation.
I don't get into the whole like Tim Hardaway is better than Tyrese Halliburton thing. But I have to admit, Dr. J and Giannis is a great conversation. But anyway, so Alabama last night. Sorry, Residente, I'm not starting with Duke. Alabama last night. You know, 20 Mr. Logical. I had to pause myself before I say this. Mr. Logical. Alabama last night. 25 of 51 from three, right?
Correct.
10 of 15 from two. They took 15 two-point shots in that game and won by 25, and their opponent scored 88.
It was unfair. And Barkley said it because I was thinking it because I was, you know, piecing together my conversation for today, and I was like, okay, I was watching it. So I had the game on my phone, I had the game on TV. And Charles Barkley was like, listen, they hit 12 threes in the first half. They can't do that again in the second half. And he's like, BYU, you went 1 for 13 from three. You're not going to do that in the second half. Well, goddamn, they didn't hit 12. They hit 13 threes in the second half. And I thought the refs were getting a little too involved, and me and Residential were going back and forth. Because we're talking about the Duke game and even the afterwards and the Alabama game before. I was like, I felt like the refs were getting a little too involved. I believe with like maybe 13 minutes left, BYU was already shooting one of what they were already in the bonus. Because Alabama was getting called. I think they got called for like four fouls in like 2.5 minutes. Granted, they were fouls and BYU was more aggressive.
Yeah, they got the Coach K special.
So they would get a lot of foul calls, but Alabama was like, yo, I'm shooting this thing from 23 feet. They were shooting 23, 24-foot threes, sidestep threes, one-legged corner threes. Sears was killing them. And BYU, I think they had like 65 or 68 points in the paint. They were killing Alabama in the paint. But they were down 17 every time I looked up. I was like, oh, here's the run. They got it to like six. It was like 50, I think it was like eight, like maybe like 58, 66, 58, something like that. I'm like, all right, bet. Bama came down and hit a three. BYU would hit a three after a few possessions. Like, finally, the Igor Demon, Denim.
Igor.
Mm-hmm. So he hit a three, and I'm like, all right, cool. It rattled in. Bama came right back down. Sears hit another one from 25 feet.
Bong, bong.
Offensive rebound, boom, three. And it just was like, I had faith when it was like 66-58, and they were already in the bonus. I'm like, all right, bet. it's about to slow this game down. And even the commentators like, oh, this is about to be a slow game for the rest of the time. Bama just said, he's going to keep firing away.
It was
unfair. To lose by 25 in an NCAA game when you score 88.
Nuts.
It's like, you know, those dudes are in Provo right now. Like, hey, what do you want me to do? Oh, my heck.
On top of that, Alabama's 25 three-pointers was an NCAA tournament record that broke a 35-year record held by Loyola Marymount. You remember those guys, you know, back in the day coached by Paul Westhead, who coached Magic Johnson to his first title, by the way. But the thing that stood out to me about that, I didn't know this until today, so I'm going to just share it again. You know, like, that was the year that the tragedy happened with Hank Gathers. You know, a couple of weeks earlier, basically. I didn't realize that Eric Spoelstra was the starting point guard, or I don't know if he was the starter, but he was on the court as the point guard for the Portland Pilots when Hank Gathers collapsed and passed away. That was just odd. So I was thinking about Eric Spoelstra's basketball life. We were talking about this a little bit off camera. So Eric Spoelstra was on the court when Hank Gathers died. He became a video guy. Got hired and worked for Pat Riley, coached LeBron James, Dwayne Wade, and the Heatles, took another team that wasn't the Heatles to the NBA Finals.
Twice.
And then one of his players is fucking his ex-wife. That's a hell of a basketball life.
He did that twice. He spent the 6 NBA Finals.
That's a hell of a basketball life.
When Jimmy Butler was out here playing like Jimmy Empty Buckets
in
California.
But you know, so Auburn, I mean, I'm sorry, Alabama, you know, I'm interested now because, you know, saying cover your ears, Mike, cover your ears, Residente. Alabama's the one team left in the tournament that can score with Duke. I'm not predicting an upset or anything. I'm just saying they're the one team in the tournament that's left that can score with Duke. Now, you got some teams that could probably defend Duke a little bit, right? You got Auburn still around. You know, you got Tennessee who beat my Wildcats tonight still around. Houston still around, at least for tonight. We'll see what happens. But none of those teams can score with Duke.
If Bama has an on ball defender,
this is Duke's title on a platter right now. Don't blow it.
Yeah, I saw Arizona. I know you
picked Florida, but I'm just saying. We'll get to Florida too.
Yeah,
but
whoever number five was for Arizona last night, he was getting the Cooper flag in the second half. I think he had a couple of steals. He was pressuring him a lot. He ended up falling out probably like maybe 2 or 3 minutes left. I think the game was still kind of in the balance.
Mm-hmm. KJ Lewis, yeah.
Yeah, but he was really giving Cooper problems. Now, Cooper was still getting around him, and I think they were kind of walling it off. So in the second half, a lot of those bounces didn't go because he was playing both ways very hard. The ball's going through him a lot, running through a lot of screens. He's the real deal. Like, he was shooting.
He's the real deal.
He was coming off balance and still getting on balance, get the shot off balance, getting the lob passes off to the big, you know, Sudanese player that they had in the middle.
You know, and speaking of the transfer portal, Arizona had Trey Townsend on their team. If y'all don't know that name, everybody remembers the name Jack Golkey, but you know, Trey was the one killing Kentucky on the inside, you know, last year in that game. They got the Duke killer. I talked about it, right?
Was that Caleb Love?
Yeah, Caleb Love, the Duke killer, right? He put up 35 points.
But I don't know what his draft stock is.
I
don't know what his measurables are.
He's 6'4". Caleb Love is listed at 6'4", 205. His draft stock is undrafted. Undrafted?
Really?
Because he only does this against Duke.
He looks like he looked a lot like he looked a lot like Dwayne Wade against the Mavericks.
He was on the court. He was on the team that won the game at Cameron in Coach K's last home game. That same team that beat Duke later that year in North Carolina in Duke's first ever Final Four meeting, which is odd to believe, you know. But he does this against Duke, and it was like watching half baked. He was in the middle of the record store saying, "Who's coming with me, man? Who's coming with me?" And nobody came with
him. The thing about it, they were playing great. Like, I think Duke just plays – they play with a different level of confidence. Caleb Love was playing like – he was playing as if he had 2 or 3 years of experience on the guys he was playing against. Like
he does. You can
tell. Guess what I'm saying? And that's what I mean. He's playing like that. He was playing like a guy that was like, this is the moment. These are my spots. This is what I'm allowed to do as a player of my caliber. You know, sometimes you get like Cooper Flagg, he probably could have put up more shots, but I think his team is a little bit more balanced, well-rounded.
Hey, that's like a great game tomorrow, though, Mr. Logical. That's a great game tomorrow. I am here for all of Duke and Alabama. I am here for that game.
They better watch.
Alabama might be the last stand.
They shouldn't watch. Don't watch the BYU game. I would watch the games they had before because Alabama only hit like 12 threes.
Well, Alabama
in a couple of games before.
Alabama's not the Golden State Warriors. You know, they're not this great shooting team. They have shooters, but they're not this team that just drags you up and down the court and splashes you, so to speak.
I'd watch the first 2 round games to see how they defended Alabama at the three. I don't know. I watched the game, and I don't think BYU was doing it poorly. I just felt like because everybody was hitting the three. Because you talk about that Loyola Marymount game,
right?
One guy hit 11 of the 21,
right?
Whereas in that first half, it was like 3 or 4 guys knocking in three. So it's like,
well, Mark Sears went 10 of 16 himself.
Yeah, he went 10 from three. Yeah, but he hit like 6 in the second half, or he, four or five in the second half.
I think he hit 4 in the
Yeah, so it's like he, and then the other guy, I believe it's Holiday.
Yeah.
He started hitting, but it was like in the first half, a couple of guys hit, and then everybody else is like, yo, let me get one. And then he got one. I'm like, yo, let me get one. And let me get one. So it's probably like 4 or 5 guys that hit threes at the initial 12. So when they were shooting those threes in the second half, those guys were shooting from, like I said, like 24 feet out. They were shooting from deep threes.
Well, it's funny because Nate Oates, the head coach of Alabama, after the game, he was being interviewed, and you know they asked him like, "Did you plan this way?" And he said that he noted that when he was watching film, BYU goes under the screen so much that you just have to shoot it because they go under so much.
Yeah, you know? But so, even with that, you go under, like you talk about, what's the halftime score right now for Purdue and Houston? 23-24 or something like that.
It's right now. Let's see. Halftime, it's 31-29 Purdue. And the other game was 30-29. So we got low scoring.
Okay. And Alabama had 36 points off of threes yesterday. So it's just like some college teams take advantage of it. And I just feel like Alabama just looked at it like, you know what? I'm a college athlete. I'm a Division I basketball player. I can hit this shot if you leave me open. And they were just taking that shot. They weren't getting anything in the paint. Like, they were getting fouls and travels and turnovers. But as soon as they got that thing outside the arch, it was like, the way they were playing inside the paint, there was no way you thought they scored 113 points.
Well,
BYU was playing on the opposite end, but they were literally going 3 for 2.
Well, the good news for Duke is that the three teams that beat them this year are nowhere to be found. Kansas, gone. Clemens, gone. Kentucky, as of tonight, gone. But I will give Alabama a puncher's chance. I'm going to pick Duke to win, but I'm going to give Alabama a puncher's chance just because they get up and down the court just like Duke does. They just don't have the defense to match. So I'm going to take Duke to win, but Alabama may just be the last stand. If Alabama can't shoot Duke out the gym, then this might be Duke's title on a platter.
Title to win, yeah.
Yeah. Florida, you know, Mike brought up Florida. He picked Florida to win the national title, even though he's a Duke fan. How about that, Dukey Nation? But last night, right, Mike, I talked about it, right? I said Maryland was going to slow down Will Clayton. They did. They just got their asses pounded on the boards. Pause. You know what I'm saying? Listen to this. They got out-rebounded by Florida 38-20. Dirk Queen, that lottery pick, 27-5, right? 4 of the other 15 rebounds went to Angel Reese's little brother. You know what I'm saying?
Runs in the family.
So, you know, Florida is – I don't even know how to explain it. Florida is really good, and I hate it. You know what I'm saying? Like, but I don't even know who I want to win the title. Like, if it was Duke and Florida, I would like literally just throw up. Like, if one of those two teams won the title, but you got to give credit where credit is due. You know what I'm saying? Florida Borden Golden, you know, he's come in the last couple of years. He's had them on the verge of this, you know, that started off with Colin Castleton. And you know what I mean? You did tell me that, Mike, you put me on the game. You know, Florida is the real deal. You know, Florida tomorrow has a tough opponent, you know what I mean? And let me tell you about this opponent that had the second biggest comeback in NCAA tournament history. Sweet 16 history. They came back from 16 against Coach Kari and the Arkansas Razorbacks. Mr. Logical, the first half of that game went exactly how I said it was going to go. Arkansas was going to be too long in the paint, you know what I'm saying, crushing Texas Tech down low, and then Texas Tech said, enough of this shit. You know what I'm saying? And they turned it on. They came back and won. But against
is Calipari just not a – because you're a Kentucky fan. We talked about Memphis. He's probably been one of the greatest coaches' personalities that we've seen in modern basketball. Does he not make adjustments?
Does he not
make timely moves?
He does not. Like,
is it just simply he just galvanizes guys and guys just kind of play hard through their talent?
So this is the problem. This is the problem.
Because he seems to falter in the tournament too often.
I think Calipari is a great coach in the sense of coach. Like you said, he merges all these personalities together. The egos get put to the side. And eventually, like, his teams all start out slow for the most part. And then by February, you don't want to play them. You know what I'm saying? But the problem is that Calipari, one, he doesn't want to play zone. You know, he doesn't want to mix up the offense at all. You know, it's just going to be dribble, drive, dribble, drive, dribble, drive until you get it right. What I didn't like last night, you know what I'm saying, Boogie Flan, you know, I'm big on him. You know what I'm saying? I think, you know, he's going to be an NBA player. He was hurt most of the year, broken thumb, came back. And I feel in those first two games that Arkansas won in this tournament, he was the one that set the tone. He was the one that, not necessarily scoring-wise.
And then he couldn't get the ball in on the inbounds in the first round game.
But he only played 9 minutes last night. You know what I'm saying? So they got my guy, John L. Davis, right? I talk about FAU, right? He went to FAU. He was on that Final Four team. He scored 30 points last night. 8 for 22. This is what he does. And a lot of times people look at the end part of it and say, well, he scored 30. Well, yeah, he went 8 for 22. I hope he scored 30 if he takes 22 shots. You know, so the last play of the game, the wrong guy had the ball. You don't want DJ Wagner taking that shot. You know what I mean? And that's where you can start.
He was a rejected lottery pick coming out of high school. He was big here.
Now
that's like, everything was like, if you went to go play Camden. Yeah, people were like, yo, that's a loss. You knew that was a loss because TJ was going to kill you.
And so, now he's projected around where Bronny got drafted. You know what I mean? Like just that quick. You know, he came into college with all the hype. You know all. You know the name because his dad was so good. Oh, his dad was so good. I wish we could have saw
more. What, he had 105 points in the game or just 100 straight up?
I can't remember. I think it's 105 or it's more than 100. Yeah. But I wish we could have saw more DeJuan Wagner in the NBA. I think that this is the problem with Calipari because now Arkansas looks at this season and says, hey, it started bad. We started 0-5 in the SEC. We came through. We were a 10 seed. He pulled up sets, and we lost to a better team in overtime. Now you're going to next year with all this hope. You know, you bring in another recruiting class, you're probably going to end up ranked in the top 25 by the time the tournament rolls around next year. You'll be a top 4 seed, and then you're going to get gotten second round. You know what I mean? Yeah. That's just the blueprint there.
The nature of Calipari's.
Yeah, and Michigan with an 8-point lead on Auburn with about 12 minutes left. So you know, Chance McMillan is probably still going to be out tomorrow. I think that if he were to play, they would have a better chance against Florida. But without him, I just can't see it. So I think the Gators keep on marching on and go to the Final Four. You know, Michigan State beat Ole Miss tonight. So, look, you also got the NCAA tournament in full swing. There were a lot of blowouts last night. So you asked me earlier, is that a bad thing? And obviously you don't want to see blowouts, but I think tonight's games are making up for that a little bit. You know, Ole Miss and Michigan State came down to the wire the last 30 seconds or so. Kentucky got blown out, but you know, Michigan up here about to beat a number one seed. If this holds up, you got another one seed down at the half. So even though it's not Cinderella, you know, like if Duke and Florida are the only one seeds to get to the Final Four, I think you're still made out all right.
I remember you said a few weeks ago Auburn was having one of the greatest seasons in college basketball history. What happened?
I thought that they got complacent. You know, I thought it was just one of those things where they dominated the best conference in the country, you know, and I thought they just got bored. No, the best conference. They got 14 teams in the tournament.
Yeah, say arguably though.
I don't gotta say arguably. You know what I'm saying? It is what it. They got 14 teams in the tournament. They're the best conference. You know what I mean? I did not skip over the Duke game. I talked about Caleb Love, the killer. You know what I'm saying? We talked about how Cooper Flagg is legit. We talked about how Duke's gonna beat Alabama tomorrow. What do you want from me? What do you want from me? You want me to talk about a team that lost to Kentucky? Had to throw that in there. you know, but no, I'm still enjoying the NCAA tournament. You know what I'm saying? South Carolina took out my Lady Terps today. You know what I'm saying? I didn't see that score. I didn't see the Duke Carolina girls game. So Residente, why don't you update me on that? You know what I mean? And see if Duke, if the Duke girls sent the North Carolina girls home, you know what I'm saying? Give me an update on that. But while we talk about women's basketball.
Perfect smooth transition.
Let's talk about women's basketball then. So, Mr. Logical, the WNBA has 45 regular season games.
Correct.
The Indiana Fever have 41 nationally televised games this season. The defending champion, Liberty, New York Liberty, not Biberty, you know, have 33. You know, for reference, in the NBA, the Lakers had 39 out of 82 games. So I saw.
How many did Boston have?
I don't know. I know the 76ers had 27 somehow. But Nafisha Collier, you know, we all know her. You know, yeah. She was on First Take the other day, and, you know, she was talking about it and how, you know, why, not necessarily why the Fever getting so many games, but why aren't the champs getting more games, which I think is a logical question to ask. But the only thing that I'm going to say to the WNBA is, what I got to do to get more Dejanay Carrington on TV? That's all I want to know.
She's got to go play for Indiana. I don't think the championship.
But they're New York.
But I don't think the champion is why any team or any fan base watches the games. I don't think the Eagles having 10 nationally televised games out of their 17 next year is going to be like the reason that the NFL fan watches the game. I think the NFL fan is going to want to watch wherever Shador or Cam Ward or Travis Hunter goes. I'm pretty sure people are going to want to see them on Monday night. Now, if the Eagles had 2 Monday night games and the Titans draft Travis Hunter and they gave the Titans 4, then that's like, okay, what the hell is going on? But there's so many different avenues to get national televised games in the NFL.
Boston had 34, by the way.
And the Lakers had 39.
Yes.
Okay. The Lakers got 39 because their star player is, first of all, they're out west. So that like getting them on TV is a little easier because they can play a little later slot. And their star player is one of the most, you know, he's a generational star, you know, and he has been for.
Okay. Okay. Days. Enough of that.
So I understand that part, but I don't think people were like, oh, I want to see more Boston because they won a championship. I believe the 27 games for Philly was because for some reason, like I talked about earlier, people felt like the combination of Paul George, Embiid, and Maxey was going to be like
remember that thriving
combination. I was like, I don't know if two of the three guys can stay healthy, so having them on TV this much probably won't resonate. Like I said, we talked about this, is like put Houston on TV a little bit more instead of 27 Philly games, because people are going to follow the Philly, the 76ers, no matter what, because they're a popular big market team with big names. So give them 24 games and give Houston, you know, 17. Give Oklahoma City, who was number one in the West last year, bring all their players back. Give them a bump. But also, you know, make sure Boston gets there. But Boston's going to get that with or without a championship. Because we're saying, like, if Boston doesn't win a championship, they're still getting 30. You know what I'm saying? So it's like those certain teams are going to get that time anyway. So peel back a couple, because we're going to follow Boston. We're going to follow
Miami. How many do you think OKC had?
This season, 28.
15.
What?
15. Yeah, 15.
Well, now when you get the MVP.
I remember Houston and Memphis once. That's about it.
Yeah, but national TV, because you got NBA TV, you got TNT, you got ESPN. They need to bring back the Saturday afternoon basketball and get some 3 o'clock games back in the day, like AI was talking about. Like you go to the club until 6, sleep until 1, and they go play your game at 3. I think the NBA needs to shift how they, you know, how they manage the players. But going back to the WNBA, Caitlin Clark is a draw. Like it's proven through actual numbers. There was games that were scheduled to be in 4,000 seat arenas that got moved to 18,000 seat arenas because it was the Indiana Fever and Caitlin Clark. So these are like qualifiable data points that you can use to say there's a definitive impact that she had on WNBA viewership.
Can I read you a number real quick?
Let's hear
it. All right. So last season, the Fever averaged 1.18 million viewers for their games. All the other WNBA teams drew about 394,000, and that's for Sportico. That's from Sportico, that number. Yeah.
So, like, that drives the 41 games.
You know, so I was hopeful that at the very least, because I was being petty, I was hoping that all of their games against Chicago would be televised. You know what I mean? Like Angel Reese, Caitlin Clark, Magic Bird. We've talked about this. But only two out of their five games are nationally televised against each other. You know, so as I was looking at this, like I said, Vegas has 33, New York has 32, the Chicago Sky with Angel Reese only have 24. The new team, the Golden State Valkyries, have 17. Huh?
That's a dope name.
Is it?
That's the female fighting force from Greek mythology, I believe. It's also like in the Avengers.
Yeah. So of course, you know, Paige Beckers is coming out this year. You know, I'm imagining that Haley Van Lift is finally coming out this year.
Was Juju eligible, or did she have to go back for a year?
No, she has to go one more year.
I would go ahead and rest that ACL for the next 12 months and then go straight to the WNBA draft, because she's still going to be number one overall pick.
I agree.
I'm not coming back to USC. It's cool. Clear my locker. Clear these books.
Yeah.
I'm going to rehab in Germany or somewhere.
I'm excited, you know, for the season. But I think – do you think that we're going to see the attacks, you know, on the court of Caitlin this year like we saw last year?
I don't think it was attacks. I think – listen, I'm not trying to be like this. Yeah. I think what it was is that – I believe that the female players who had been there initially had valid points. You know, it goes back to like when they interviewed all the Cleveland players before they drafted LeBron, everybody was like, yeah, we don't know a high school kid can come in, blah, 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 blah. And everyone had like their feelings early on. And then as the season played out, it was like, okay, it's clear that there's a real impact with this high school guy that got drafted into the NBA. It was a real impact with Caitlin Clark. A lot of teams were able to, you know, look at that and say, you know what? Maybe our 4,000 seat arena, maybe we can sell 12,000 or 14,000 seats. But you needed something that says, okay, this is possible. And she made it very clear. It was like, oh, not her personally, but like her presence being drafted in the team is like, oh, women can sell out these games. It's, yeah, keep in mind, it's not a lot of, I've been watching NBA games.
Yeah, Asia Wilson, unanimous MVP last year, all 67 votes.
Yeah. She's, and they had, I think they were back-to-back champions. And she was back-to-back finals MVP. Yeah. And then she had a shoe. She got her own signature shoe last year after.
What was it?
I got in an argument with another guy. Like, she had her own colorway with another shoe. It's pretty much represented her shoe, very similar to how Chet Holmgren wears KD's shoe. She was wearing like a shoe that they gave to like AD and a couple of the basketball players, but she had her own colorway. Now she has her own signature shoe. So it just takes time. If people felt like Caitlin got it early, okay, I'll give you that. But her getting it early, now you got to look at the results. You can't still be focused on, oh, she got it early. She got this attention early. That early attention had you, when you played the Fever in Indiana, you're playing against in front of 18,000 fans. And the team wasn't that good. So if you could beat her, now the league and people saw you on TV put up 32 against Caitlin Clark.
Was the WNBA going to make money this year?
I don't know what their model is. I think they should probably.
Oh, their model is Dejanay. Oh, that ain't what you meant.
I think they need to do some kind of like when I started my nonprofit, I talked to a few other directors, and what they were telling me is like you need to find like a fiscal sponsor. So you put yourself under their nonprofit umbrella. They have a 501c3, so that they're tax exempt, and they will help you get money. And then they just, when you raise money, they get a percentage because they're your fiscal partner, and they pay the taxes on, you know, they deal with the paperwork on the money you get. I think the WNBA needs to really consider sitting down and understand, like, hey, do we have enough to talk about a WNBA, NBA television deal to where we get a little bit more of that TV deal, and it's kind of like a merger, you know, like, hey, every team gets sponsored by another NBA team. I imagine it's not 30 WNBA teams. I'm not sure about the number, but we'll see what the total number is, and whatever either city you're in or whatever the closest team, like the Connecticut Sun, you just attach yourself to Brooklyn. You know, now you're in that organization. So like now when the negotiations come, Brooklyn is negotiating not only for themselves, but the Connecticut Sun team that they are physically responsible for.
With Golden State coming into the league now, there are 13 teams.
So 13 teams, you attach them
to, games.
You attach them to one of the NBA teams close, and you get some of that money to trickle down. I know it sounds crazy because people don't want to move money, but it's like, because you're trying to sell your sport no matter what. And if you can sell basketball year round, then sell it.
Here's a random question. And I'm not trying to start no drama. I'm not trying to start no wars. And I ain't trying to do none of that. I'm just asking a question. Do you think that the G League would get more ratings than the WNBA if they had the same TV access?
No.
Just a question.
The women in the WNBA are superstars. They're attractive. Like we talked about
Dejanay Carrington.
Dejanay Carrington. Now Haley Van Lith coming in.
Well, Paige Becker,
Andrew Watkins are college players.
Yeah, Rakia Jackson.
Rakia Jackson.
Cameron Brink. Sabrina.
Sabrina.
Ella Doan.
Yo, give me Kelsey Plum. Not me, Asia Wilson. Her and Bam are going to have very tall, athletic children.
And who else? Old girl that don't even play no more, Kaiser.
Kaiser, who's the original one out of Notre Dame?
Skylar.
Skylar Diggins. I think she's married now. But so, like, granted, I'm not trying to, like, marginalize them to, like, oh, they're just pretty faces. I think that how attractive you are does help your stardom, male or female.
Oh, definitely. Definitely.
Yeah, because I love Brad Pitt. I wouldn't okay, watch the movie when he was doing turn. Shakespeare. Like, if he was doing, like, if Brad Pitt was doing Shakespeare, like, let's be honest, like, that probably won't be negative of a movie.
That took a little turn, you inglorious bastard.
Yo, that was good, but he had, like, this accent, and I want my scouts. But it was like Christopher Waltz took the, he was the actor in that movie. You know, everybody else is part of it, but he was the actor in that movie, Christopher Waltz. You know what I'm saying? So, I think, like, part of that is just the stardom. I think the NBA would outshine the G League players as far as stardom, whereas I think the WNBA and the college women are, because they play college for so long, they become stars on their way into the NBA.
The way that they used to in men's basketball?
A little bit. You know, yeah. Like I said, the freshmen work. You know, the freshman one and done works, but it's just – The foreign route is kind of also taking the stardom away from players. And the fact that these guys are still playing, James Harden, Russ, KD, Brad Beal, LeBron, all these guys are like in their mid-30s. Giannis is getting up there. Like these guys are like
Brad Beal is like the basketball version of Russell Wilson.
How old Patrick Ewing was when he retired, but Patrick Ewing was, he wasn't playing meaningful playoff games at 40.
Mm-hmm.
I'm saying so, like, I think the WNBA, I mean, with 13 teams, it has to be some kind of conversation with it. The NBA has to step in, like, listen, if because, like, they got them the Jets. I don't know where the Jets came from, I don't know who negotiated that, but it to me, it seems as if a 30 league team that generates the amount of money that the NBA does for. Another team, another league to be playing in your city, probably using your arenas. It doesn't seem hard for you to be able to, like, cross-pollinate financially and figure out a way to make both of these organizations out. Because the NBA is going to be fine no matter what. But to figure out a way, like, how do we negotiate these deals so these 41 games matter? Because if they get these 41 home games and the Fever don't have enough money to, like, give, like, record-breaking deals to Caitlin Clark is like, so why you put me on TV? Like, what are we benefiting from if we're getting more TV games, adding games to the season, adding people to the seats, but yet my contract is still this much lower than where it should be considering, like, the actual mathematical growth I've provided to the league? And the same thing with Andrew Reese, the attention that the Chicago Sky are getting. You know, like, I know they won a championship with Candace Parker a few years back. And I like the free agent moves in the WNBA. Like, they tend to move a lot more, and they kind of build, like, mini super teams rather quickly. I think Kelsey Plum went to L.A. from Vegas, and they already had a stacked little team.
Yeah, Dejanay down here in Dallas now from Connecticut.
Yeah, so it's like, I mean, hell, Candace Parker went to Chicago and, like, from L.A. To kind of form like a little super team. Brianna Stewart are the same team. It's like, yeah. Brianna Stewart had the greatest women's college career, probably college career ever for any basketball player. And Sabrina was like there, but she just kept running into UConn. But they're on the same team. So it's like, I think they do the moves. They put the team together. I think they put the right faces in commercials. I think they put the right faces on billboards. It's just a matter of, like, now you see the kind of attach yourself to an, you know, NBA team, and the NBA needs to attach themselves to WNBA. Like, listen, you guys, it's your product. Now you're on TV all summer long. Now you can compete with the NFL when your season comes back around because you get more NBA players on the sideline. Maybe get some of those guys to buy into the team. You know, just something to kind of drive it.
Because yeah, maybe you could even get Ja Morant to show up for a game because he don't show up for his own games, but, you know, maybe he'll help everybody else out.
They all get the same, you know, Gucci purses and Birkin bags, so he's shopping the same places. Might as well share some of that same money.
You know, so we got 57-50 Auburn with a 7-point lead on Michigan now with 7:31 left in the game. Houston and Purdue tied at 31 with 18:55 left in the second half. So to close things off, it was opening day yesterday. So that means that spring is officially here. And you know how spring is officially here? Because Titus O'Neal hit a home run on opening day for the sixth straight year. So it's just nothing like opening day in Titus O'Neal. You know, and this goes across three teams, by the way, that he's done this with. So, you know, keep up the good work, man. Baltimore with the 5 home run performance against the Toronto Blue Jays in the 12-2 ass whooping. And then, of course, the thing about baseball, you have to change your pitcher. So Toronto beat Baltimore 8-2 today.
Yeah. The balance imbalance of baseball scores blows my mind. Because sometimes I think it's like, did you need to hit that home run to get 12 to win 12-2, or could you save it for the next night?
You can't take a knee.
it's always funny when you watch games, teams losing 20-2, and they got an outfielder in their pitching because they don't want to waste any pitchers, and guys are still swinging for the fences. Like, yeah, it's a wrap. Like, no one's gonna make an 18-run comeback. So why am I trying to strain an oblique muscle to hit this knuckleball?
You know who I feel for though. And not just because he plays for one of my teams. I feel for Mackenzie Gore.
Why is that?
13 strikeouts, 1 hit, and 6 innings. And the Phillies came back and won 7-4.
I mean, it happens. But that's the beauty of baseball. And, of course, Philly fans are already like, yo, what are we doing?
So I got a couple of questions that I wanted to ask you. So one, how do you feel about this new era of baseball where I guess pitchers are basically on pitch counts? Because generally speaking, if your pitcher has 13 strikeouts in the sixth inning, you ride that thing out at least another inning, right?
When I played baseball and I was a huge baseball fan growing up, I'd never even heard the phrase pitch count. Now they use it across other sports when they talk about any kind of time limit, it was pitch count. I think the first time I really heard it was Steven Strasburg after his Tommy John surgery, because he was supposed to be like this generational pitcher, which he ended up being like, you know, just injuries cut your career short when you're throwing the ball 102 miles an hour. You don't want to be the manager that has a guy out there an extra inning, then either he tears something, pulls something, now you're missing him for 2 weeks. So you have to look at your 162 games in 181 days. That guy's going to be working every 5 days. If you can get him earlier rest on the one day that he's working, and then give him 4 full days. Because say 3 innings requires like 12 hours of healing. Say like they do the math. Say it's 9 innings. If a guy pitches all 9 innings, he needs 12 hours for every 3 innings to recover. Like say that's the math that the doctors use. Crew rest kind of thing. So he pitches his 9 innings. The game ends at midnight. That means he needs to do nothing with his throwing arm until like, what's that, 12, like halfway through, you know, into his 5-day rest. Like he's halfway through the second day and he has to pitch again in 2.5 days. But if you take him on the 6th inning, 6 o'clock p.m., now he can rest that night. It's good to go. And then
he is into the analytics now.
2 full days before he has to be warming up to pitch his next game. I mean, it has to be, I don't know exactly what it is, but it has to be something along those lines where it's like the recovery time for this guy's arm is associated with the amount of breaks he gets. So if you have a guy that's like, listen, hey, I want him to get 3 full days of rest on that arm, then he can only pitch.
So let me ask you this: does it matter where in the season you are, because this is opening day we're talking about. So do you have a little bit of a different viewpoint if we're in August?
No.
And you're, there's a playoff spot on the line and all that stuff.
If the playoff spot on the line, the other three guys are going to bring in to close this game out need to do their job. You know, I can't risk, you know, straying from a medical plan for a guy because I think the middle reliever can't get this guy out. Because if I believe that about the middle reliever, I got to get another middle reliever in so I can keep this guy who's going to pitch about 30. I want him to pitch 30 games in 180 days. I need my middle relievers to be able to come in and throw an inning.
And obviously they can't.
And that's the thing. I think learning that early, now you can evaluate, okay, is this middle reliever any good? While still simultaneously resting you got 162 games. I'm not saying like you can just tank and figure it out, but you have bats, you have guys that can hit the ball and score runs, but your pitching is going to be the difference between you having 90 wins or 119 wins. I would lean heavily to making sure that my pitching can get me through September and October.
Okay. Second question. So last year, the Tampa Bay Rays started out 13-0, and they didn't make the playoff.
Yeah.
You know, in 1982, the Braves started 13-0, got swept in the first round of the playoffs. The Brewers started 13-0 in 1987. And they lost in the World Series. You know what I'm saying?
It's the reason there's no 13 in elevators.
So how about this? Just point blank, flat out. Are the Dodgers going to break the single season record and win 117 games?
That would make them 117 and 45.
Mm-hmm. The record is 116 and 46.
So 45. So when was that record? When was that record set? The 116.
Oh man, that was going to be my next question. I was going to make you guess who it was.
I think it's probably a team. I would hope that team won the World Series of the year.
Win that World Series.
It doesn't seem like a Yankee number because the Yankees seem to like go about 100. Was it the Yankees?
It was not the Yankees.
Okay, yeah. It just seemed like the Yankees don't really have.
No, like I feel like if it was the Yankees, the Yankees would have, you know, won the World Series.
116 and 46. Didn't win the World Series.
Nope, they lost in the ALCS to the Yankees in 5 games. So imagine that, winning 116 games and losing a series in 5 games.
Was it Toronto?
No. That's a good guess, though.
It wasn't Oakland.
Damn sure it wasn't Oakland.
Even with the Beamer ball. Went Boston because they would never, because you would hear that all the time from Yankee fans.
And while Mr. Logical is figuring this out, 67-54 Auburn with 403 left. Houston up 42-37 with 14-19 left.
Auburn must have put a trap on or something that got them easy layups. They had to put on something because, like, generally those teams Bruce Pearl's teams don't shoot the three that well. But they defend, like they full court press you to death. And it seems like they had to get some easy run out layups.
Right.
We'll check the highlights after this. 100 Cleveland?
No.
All right, I'm out. So I want to.
It was the Seattle Mariners.
One, yeah, that seems like a Seattle Mariners kind of thing to do.
Yeah, it was the Seattle Mariners. But the most surprising thing about that for me is not the fact that the Seattle Mariners did it. The surprising part is they did it the year A-Rod left. So they had no Ken Griffey. They had no A-Rod. And they won 116 games. So they lost in the ALCS to the Yankees in five games.
I think the Dodgers would probably have. I mean,
so I don't think they're going to break it. I don't think they're going to go for it.
They're
going
to break the record. I just think they're going to be able to coast because I believe the NL West. Early August,
but the other part of that
is going to be like the Dodgers are going to have such a lead where if Mookie Betts needs a day to rest an ankle, he'll take it.
But here's the other part of the question that I think is a little more interesting. So let's say the Dodgers are at 110 wins with about 16 games to go. Do you go for it?
I think you just put out a lineup and just play ball. But I wouldn't if Ohtani's on like some kind of like personal home run record, like he's about to hit. I mean, this sounds
crazy. Of course, he did hit a home run yesterday.
Like if he's on the pace to hit like 76 home runs or 74, some outrageous, then you keep playing him. But if he's sitting at like 47 home runs by that point. And you have a comfortable lead, and then you let guys just kind of rest whatever their ailments are. And then you bring in guys like you're the Dodgers, you're pretty deep. You probably have a good, AAA program, minor league program, good pipeline program. Bring in some guys, you can still go out there and win games 3-1, 3-1, 1-0, whatever case may be. So you don't really need all your heavy, especially if you can rest your heavy hitters and you have that. Yeah. I would play a lineup that keeps my team healthy.
Yeah, so when Seattle did it, they won the division by 14 games. You know, so that's another one. I mean, another team in their division won 102 games that same year. That was Oakland. So you heard from Chris today?
He said the thing. No, that was yesterday with Stephen A. Smith.
Well, I was going to say probably not because, Framber Valdez held the Mets to one run. So much for that high-powered offense yesterday, to start the season, Juan Soto, Pete Alonso. So you probably didn't hear from Chris yesterday.
I mean, listen, sometimes it happens. It's baseball, but, I mean, $700 million deferred over the next 715 years, I'm pretty sure.
What I need to figure out, though, is why so many baseball teams had today off.
Think $700 million. Just a
rain day or something. I don't know if it's like I don't know what happened, but like there were only nine games today.
I'm just thinking about something because we talk about Bobby Bonilla. I don't know what Bobby Bonilla Day is. It's coming up soon, I believe, where he gets paid out for his that crazy contract that he got deferred by the Mets, so that guy can invest
July with Bernie 1st. Madoff.
Mm-hmm. I think the Orioles also have a Bobby Bonilla payday as well. So I think he's getting like $1.8 million every year from like 2002 to like 2029 or something like that. Uh-huh. Depends on how like the contract's paid out. But think about like, granted, this would never happen. But Juan Soto has a $700 million deal.
Yes.
Earning $1 million a year. It's like the goal for so many people. Like if I can earn $1 million, it's like the craziest thing. They could literally pay him $1 million a year and his family for 700 years. Life-changing money, $1 million a year. Like if you and I right now signed a deal with ESPN, even though we're always shitting on them, or Fox Sports 1 or CBS Sports, and we're getting $1 million a year, our life is different. The backdrop doesn't look like this if we get $1 million in a 12-month window.
Yeah, I definitely don't got no damn Nebraska jersey back there. Yeah,
this dude could do that for 700 years. Like, it's crazy with these deferments. But I think the Mets will be all right.
Yeah, they won today 3-1.
Your money matters in baseball, I think more to even baseball, college football, college basketball. I think the money you can put into the players, I think it translates directly. And collegiate sports in general. I think the money you can put onto the field and who you can provide that money to for their services, I think translates. Baseball is one of those sports where, like, you just need those guys you pay money to hit. And if you get enough of them, maybe Stanton is not hitting, but Aaron Judge is. Maybe, you know, Soto isn't hitting, but Alonso, is hitting. Or they're both doing it. Mm-hmm. And now you got to pitch around both of them, and now these other guys are also getting hit. So you're going to be able to throw enough money at your problem or your goal of winning the World Series, and your team should be fine. If it does not work out, I'd hate to be the manager of that team because your kid's coming out of private school because they're going to fire you because I got a $700 million player. I got a $600 million player. I got a $300 million player. I got a couple of $200 million players. And we are tied with the Braves at 12-13 after 25 games. I'm going to be pissed.
All right. So you want to close it out with some good news?
Let's hear it.
The White Sox won yesterday.
Yo, they're not doing that. They ready for it this year.
You know what I'm saying? They know the South Side doesn't play that. They beat the Angels 8-1. They are over 500 for the first time in 2 years.
Jesus Christ.
The Chicago White Sox. Years. Break up. Yeah, two calendar years. Break them up. Break up the White Sox.
Break up the Angels.
Oh, the Angels are awful. Like, Oakland is up on Seattle 6-0 right now. So, I look. So, Auburn 70-56 with 154 left. Houston and Purdue 46-41. They just hit the under 12 timeout. So, hey, folks, thanks for your time. Thanks for joining us, making us a part of your Friday. Enjoy your weekend. Elite Eight starts tomorrow, concludes Sunday. Final Four next Saturday. Championship game next Monday. And, oh, before I leave, I wouldn't be 2-5 if I didn't give a shout out to the NIT Final Four. Chattanooga, shout out Terrell Owens, the 2023 NIT champion, North Texas Mean Green. Give it up for Sister Jean. Loyola Chicago is in the NIT Final Four. And finally, UC Irvine, who should have been in the NCAA tournament in my dream of the Big West getting two teams in. But ladies and gentlemen.
Did you have to read your announcement?
I got an – oh, no. She took it from me.
Yeah,
She was supposed to rewrite it, but right. But she never came back.
We'll save it for the next show.
Yeah, we'll save it for the next show. But hey, he is Mr. Logical, the one and only, the world renowned. Do not bring feelings to a facts fight.
Don't do it.
You know what I'm saying? And I am your unorthodox statistician. Hoping that you like, review, subscribe, share, rate, do all the free things. Do all the good things, and while you're at it, have you a liquid death. We will be back on Tuesday to talk about the Final Four around association, and I got a topic that I'm about to talk to Mr. Logical about right now. We love you. Peace.